Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Paul Hogan, Emma Sanders and John Gibbons looking back at the game against Newcastle. Where on earth did Southampton come from? And looking ahead to the game against Tottenham Hotspur. Also, if you listen to this as a podcast, we have got Vicky and Jess from the Merseymaid store and Andy Kenwright on his Zebedee Zika series of children books. Both of those things are to come. But we will start off with that game against Newcastle. And we'll start off with the idea, John, that it sort of becomes a little bit of a no-win for the Reds. We expect this Liverpool team to absolutely cut a side like Newcastle to shreds. And I think that they play pretty well first half, but they don't end up with sort of 3-4-5, as you might think, having played pretty well. Mo Salah misses a perfectly serviceable one-on-one. The actual Mo Salah goal, if it doesn't hit the back of the net, the lad may well get sent off, but there'd definitely be a Liverpool penalty. Feels as though there was more opportunities in the game for Liverpool, but Liverpool just wanted to get a certain job done, beat Newcastle and crack on with the rest of the season. And I think that it made it all a little bit odd. It's a very strange thing to watch a brilliant, brilliant side and feel a little disappointed, and that's really unfair on them.
Yeah, I mean, it is, isn't it? But, you know, that the set expectations so high with the sort of continued brilliance that, you know, you expect big things. Obviously, the City results, you know, we've got everyone talking as well. Oh, can we sort of match that? Can Liverpool go out to do something like that? It's not a team that's ever concerned itself with stuff like that, really. That's always been sort of fan-based chat. And whenever there's been, oh, this is an opportunity to get the goal difference up, we've just never sort of really done it. They're not sort of that sort of team. I think that the COVID stuff has not necessarily spooked everyone, but got in everyone's head a little bit as well. You know, I think by the sounds of it, it was on the day. Then obviously, you know, Virgil and Fabinho would have been expected to play. Then suddenly they're out and other lads in. And, you know, they are human beings. So I think they'll be thinking about that. You know, they'll be thinking about whether the fact that they've been around the teammates and things like that. They'll be thinking about the families and stuff. So I think... And then obviously there's another big game on Sunday, and so, you know, but is that going to go ahead? So I think with all the uncertainty in the air and things like that, it just, and also the fact that Newcastle were rubbish, like I think we do play better against better teams. And I think that was the thing with the Champions League draw, wasn't it? When, you know, it looked tough, you know, the group, but people were saying, so it's quite rightly, actually, we're almost better off with these sort of games. And that's how we proved. We got 18 points. I think Newcastle's rubbishness dragged us down a little bit as well. I'd love the scintillating performance last night where we tore them apart and scored sort of 7 or 8, but it didn't happen. And I think there's a variety of mitigating circumstances for that, and so we take the win, and we all got to see a Trent Alexander-Arnold belter as well.
We did indeed get to see a Trent Alexander-Arnold belter, Paul. I think there's something strange as well, where I do think that we don't know what the COVID situation is in terms of basically are any players going to test positive next. But I think I think this would have been the case even if no one had. I think this Liverpool side still is a bit of a funny team in second gear. They can't quite work out where to pitch themselves and pitch their intensity. And I think that also impacts the performance, that they are trying to win this game in second gear. They've got a big game on Sunday. But the other thing they might all be increasingly aware of is they might have a big game on Sunday with an increasingly depleted squad. So there isn't, you know, the idea of exuberance. I think they were trying to avoid exuberance. They were trying to be professional all the way through the match. It just sort of led to a slightly sticky second half where it would have been quite nice to see them cut loose. But also Newcastle get to improve in the game too.
Yeah. I think all the things that you said, you know, it was a real strange atmosphere. Even in the crowd, it felt a little bit Atleti. The amount of messages that I got that was saying it felt a little bit Atletico last year. And it just felt a little bit strange anyway. And then, you know, he did the job, didn't he? He did the job without really getting into second gear. I think, you know, some of the things that go on, some of the things that went on in the second half, sometimes it's getting out of that mentality a little bit, that of the things that we've saw in the past, and realising this team does do the job. They get over the line more often than not. But, you know, psychologically, from a Liverpool fan point of view, sometimes I struggle to recognise some of that stuff. And you know, so, but they got the job done. And you know, it must be a little bit weird for them at the moment. Wonder what's coming next, really, I think. So
the other thing about playing in second gear is, I think, for instance, it doesn't I don't think it helps Thiago first half, Emma. I think part of why he's almost trying to switch his brain back on is a couple of really weird moments sort of watching him hit the side of his own head. Like, come on, what are you doing? You know, he apologises to the whole stadium after he makes the mistake. You know, he was on the verge, I think, coming around every stand and just individually going, I am sorry about that, we'll sort this out. But I think that's a funny thing, isn't it? It is, they're all trying to sort of manage themselves a little bit. Whereas you get the impression they do just suit, as John said before, they almost suit a tough Champions League group where it's all serious, it's all business, and it doesn't stop being all business. They knew this wasn't going to be all business in quite the same way, and then they end up with a sloppy goal conceded.
Yeah, there's always that danger, isn't there, when you're sort of preparing for a team to sit back and not come at you, and you having to, you know, grind out the result and work hard, that it almost kind of gets in your head a little bit before kickoff, I think, sometimes with Liverpool, where they almost go into the game thinking, right, this is going to be a slog, we need to grind this out, rather than, you know, as they would against, like, I don't know, a Man City team, where they go, right, first 10 minutes, we're just going to absolutely go all out, get in their faces, play with real intensity, which we actually saw from Arsenal against West Ham in that sort of big kind of like top four game the other night. They just came out, you know, all guns blazing. It's almost like Liverpool had that mentality of like, this is going to be a grind. Thiago, I think, was a really good example of that, because I think he's the type of player that almost needs like a Virgil van Dijk behind him, just being like, sort yourself out, mate, like get yourself into gear. And I like, when I think about this Liverpool side, I think there's, for me, four players who really jump out in terms of setting the intensity. That's Bobby Firmino, Jordan Henderson, probably Van Dijk, and then Fabinho. Van Dijk, because of his leadership and sort of organisation, and just the fact that he is a scary human being and will just like have a go at you. Fabinho, naturally, because of the way, you know, he comes in and just absolutely takes out players, and he just kind of has that knack to, with one tackle, almost get the crowd going again. Henderson, for obvious reasons, and then Firmino, obviously, with his pressing, and three of those players weren't in the starting 11. So I do think that, you know, has a bit of an impact. But yeah, I think on the whole, it was just one of those where I think it was always going to be a grind, and Liverpool almost played into Newcastle's hands to begin with. But at the end of the day, as we said, you know, they got the job done, and 3 points at this stage is just the most important thing.
I want to talk about a couple of performances, Paul. First, being Henderson. It felt he was, certainly for the first hour of the match, almost having to be a bit of a one-man midfield in there, because I think Chamberlain was just trying to get himself involved higher up the pitch. Thiago was struggling immensely. One of the things I think it makes difficult for him when he's in that position, Henderson, is that he doesn't get to play with Jordan Henderson, which might seem an obvious thing to say, but Fabinho often gets to play with Jordan Henderson, just sort of over there in the 2 o'clock position, doing stuff as well around tempo. And I think he's, you know, they were funny, I thought, on that right-hand side, especially in the second half last night. It didn't feel like it was anywhere near as fluent. First half, Salah stayed really wide, and you saw Thiago, Henderson and Matip all try to get the ball to him really, really quickly at different times. But I thought Henderson managed to both cover the gaps and dictate tempo reasonably well, strong enough in there.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, the spaces in that midfield are so key, aren't they, to the way we play, and Henderson knows exactly what he's doing, as did Wijnaldum before. And it's felt a little bit, although you can see this midfield coming around now when Fabinho's in there, where that spacing is, you know, they're getting there, aren't they, with that very much so. But it did feel a little bit like Henderson was having to, not for lack of effort from the other two, but having to do a lot of running and a lot of fixing for the other two while they were working themselves out. Someone's just put in the chat there about them two getting in their own heads. I think they are two players that do get in their own heads, Ox and Thiago. And, you know, Henderson sort of pulled them through a little bit, I think, for a little while and boxed them off. And then you could see both of them grow into the game, to be fair, from there.
The... Other thing, again, in the comments, Issam Kayasi says, John, second half, Trent played midfield. I thought Liverpool were having a little look at something second half. Trent really does come very, very narrow in that second 45. I think then the idea is that Oxlade-Chamberlain sort of pushing up before the substitution in there as well. I think it actually reverts a tiny bit back to, in inverted commas, normal once Keita came on. But I think that there's... at the minute we've used the line, sometimes they use the games as training, but we don't actually think about what that means. I think second half, there was a desire to have a little look at something a little bit different from the manager.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think we've seen Trent coming inside, but it's generally been around the box or sort of driving. He's cut inside, he's driving towards goal. Someone like Henderson's on the overlap or Salah, and we've seen them like that. Last night, he played a big chunk at six.
Yeah,
he was playing in front of the centre half, so it was, and you kept expecting him to go back, like, oh, this is just something that's happened in play, and they're all going to go back, and he just sort of stayed there as a six, really, and I don't think we've seen that before, and it was interesting, and a couple of people around me were sort of commenting on it and say, it feels like, as you said, Neil, we're having a look at something there, so maybe that'll be something that will come, over the next couple of months or stuff, or just maybe it might just be a case of, with the COVID situation, that we're going to need players to be a little bit more versatile. So they'll say, if we've got two lads who can play right back, but only sort of two midfielders, what is our sort of solution to that? So there might be an element of that going on. I don't know, but it was interesting. I agree.
The other thing that you get from Arnold is the delivery, the quality, Emma, and we get a great example of it. In the end, I wrote in my match review, I thought Konate played ever so well. I thought Henderson was impressive. But if you want to actually talk about a man who determines a lot of the match, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold. Does the tackle, which in the penalty areas, the ball was coming across at the one end. And then at the other end, he scores the goal that takes it from 2-1 to 3-1. Liverpool get to 2-1, but it's Alexander-Arnold who firstly keeps them there and then secondly makes it 3.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought that he was at the forefront of everything that sort of went through Liverpool, positive going forward. And you mentioned earlier about Salah having, loads of touches, like just in the first 15 minutes. I just remember watching it thinking, like, he's basically just playing by himself. And it was all coming through kind of Trent. And if it wasn't coming through him, it was his overlapping runs or it was the space that he was occupying and drawing, defenders away to give Salah that space to run into. So I do think he was, like, absolutely vital for Liverpool last night. But also just, the way that he is now popping up with these big goals, I think is something which is just really, really good for him personally. That third one just absolutely kills the game. Liverpool were, I think once they sort of got the equaliser, you sort of felt, from there that it was going to be okay. Obviously that, they went and got the second really, really quickly, but it was getting a little bit nervy. I think the crowd were sort of getting a little bit anxious just because of the domination that Liverpool had. And then before he sort of, steps up and put away the third, there's always that danger, isn't there? But yeah, I think it was a huge game for him. And, it's one that probably won't get the headlines in terms of, people won't look back at the season and go, oh, that game against Newcastle where Trent was just absolutely unreal. But they should do, really, because, he sort of did win that game.
The tackle was just spectacular, Paul. In the end, when you're in the grand scheme of things, it would have been unbelievably harsh if that had turned into 2-2. But if he isn't there, if he doesn't make the intervention that he makes, it almost certainly would have turned into 2-2 and that Alisson had been dragged a little bit out of position. Not out of position. He played well, actually, in the little break, Newcastle. But he does... It's a magnificent intervention.
I played centre-half, obviously nowhere near to that level, but to have the confidence to sort of be aggressive in the tackle and try and get that side of the man, that wouldn't be your natural way of defending that, would it? You'd be coming round as a fullback coming round the other side. But it was just that confidence to go, I can get this, I can win this, I don't need to come round the other side, which almost certainly wouldn't have made anyway. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. And you can just see, can't you, the difference from, and I don't think he got a bit of criticism last season, but playing him in the position that he enjoys, playing him where he's comfortable, playing to his strengths, he's now in a position where he's defending in ways that he's good at, rather than making him do things that I think last season we were asking him to do. Unbelievable tackle, but like all round game. I love the fact that Salah can stand on the touchline and Trent's just as comfortable coming inside. He's quite happy to go wherever he needs to go, wherever there's space.
Next one along the line, mentioned Konate before, John. I think he sort of grows into a tiny bit. It's interesting he plays left, I think. You know, that he goes left, Matip stays right for this one. I think it shows a confidence in him. He was excellent in Milan. He's perfectly good against a Newcastle side that, albeit, didn't have a ton of threat, but then that's a lot of the sides we play at Anfield, and you've still got to make sure you've got to almost say to them, there's a reason why you're not trying to attack very much. Van Dijk's brilliant at it. There's a reason why you're not wasting your time with me. And I think that Konate, by the end of the game, had a lot of that sort of vibe going on.
Yeah, it was the best centre-half performance at Anfield I've seen since Hogan for Woodlands FC back in 2015. Don't listen to him about his level. He might have got off injured after 20 minutes, but that 20 minutes was... was phenomenal. No, Konate, it's funny with Konate. I've seen a few people say they thought he was man of the match, and then others, and I think one or two in the comments here actually say that they weren't quite sure about him. He looked a little bit sort of maybe rusty, maybe. I thought he played really well. I wouldn't necessarily say sort of man of the match necessarily, but I think he played really well. And yeah, it's a period where we're going to need him, whatever the case is. I know I would have said that, you know, without the sort of the COVID stuff, you know, going on, I think he was always going to get games in this period now. He might get a few more than sort of what he bargained for, really, but he looks ready. He looks ready to me. He looks like he's used this time well with the squad. He looks like he's fitted in well in terms of what we want defenders to do, really. And yeah, I think those few months, you know, we'd be glad of them sort of looking back. I mean, he'd have been keener to get a few more games, I think, but I think, you know, Rafa, I was just reading about Everton before I sort of came on. This was getting my head there. Jürgen does like to sort of bed people in slowly, doesn't he? He does like them to have the sort of time to come in and sort of show themselves, you know, a little bit to the squad first. And I think this period, you know, we'll look back on in a sort of similar way to say the Andy Robertson and things like that, and even Fabinho ahead of them, really. And yeah, he looks like ready to go for me. And yeah, good timing indeed.
Indeed. His centre-half partner, Emma, I think was excellent. And it's as much about that distribution now, the ball carrying and the distribution, but I thought the distribution yesterday was great. It was the unlikely partnership, as I said before, Joel Matip into Mohamed Salah. Was not one that, you know, you don't necessarily anticipate, but repeatedly he nails that pass down that side to the point that I actually think Newcastle deal with it a bit better second half. But the very idea that you're going in at half time and your manager's got a list of things he's got to raise with you, and one of them is, can you stop the centre half from being a playmaker, please?
Yeah, he's now gone into my top five, you know, like five-a-side picks, like Joel Matip, just in that sort of, you know, creative playmaker role. Nice. I reading the comments again, you know, everyone was full of praise for Matip last night, and rightly so, because I thought he was fantastic. As you mentioned, his distribution was absolutely spot on. We've seen that from him throughout the whole season and last season. But also, I just think, we speak about that so much, and rightly so, but his actual defending for me has improved, I think, over the last season, in particular, really, just because I think obviously playing alongside somebody like Van Dijk will help. But it's almost like he's got a bit of a leadership about him now that I perhaps didn't see before. And especially playing alongside Konate last night, I felt like we saw that. It was almost like he sort of, Matip stood up and said, right, you know, I am the kind of the senior centre-back here, and I'm going to organise the defence and sort of, you know, fill that void left by Van Dijk. And I thought he did an absolutely fantastic job. And as you say, he was more on that kind of right-hand side, helping out Trent when he went forward. And I think that was really important because, you know, with Fabinho missing in that midfield at times, obviously, you know, you do worry that when the full-backs push forward, that space that is often sort of mopped up by Fabinho, you know, Matip almost worked alongside Henderson in terms of, you know, cutting that out. So, yeah, I thought it was a fantastic performance. And look, having, you know, all the centre-backs that we do at the club at the moment, after having last season where basically it was non-existent, I just think is such a luxury now.
I think the idea of last season on this, Paul, it's got my attention in terms of what is, you know, Matip, the idea of him taking greater responsibility, the leadership sort of aspect, he does have to be the senior centre-half for a long period of last season before he finally ebbs away. And I wonder if that's part of what sort of stood him into good stead. It must have been no battle of laughs playing centre-half for Liverpool at times when he was doing it last year, with God knows who next 2 years, not being 100% fit himself, as we latterly discovered. But he does appear to have stepped up in that regard as well in every single way. He appears to be without sort of getting into the cultish, no context matter stuff, he does appear to have far greater personality on the pitch.
Yeah, forgetting ability wise, I've thought Matip was like a long line of centre halves that we've had for a long time, which have been sort of lads who've got loads of ability but don't command. You feel like they need someone alongside them, i.e. Carragher, to point them in the right direction. Sort of, they don't even necessarily need to play the other lad. They just need to point and show them what to do. And we've had loads of them over the years. And that's the thing. I think the biggest acknowledgement of Matip from last night's game is he made Konaté as well. You know, we've given that praise to Van Dijk for so long now, haven't we, where it's like, oh, he makes everyone who plays alongside him look better. Well, I think we could possibly level that towards Matip now as well. You know, lads who play alongside him look more confident, and he is commanding. You know, he's definitely got a voice in that dressing room. You know, the t-shirts that came out around him that a number of them have worn and stuff like that, you can see maybe it's took him quite a while, but he feels like he's sort of a significant member of that dressing room, whereas in the past it's felt like he's been a bit peripheral, maybe, and maybe that's because he hasn't been able to get any kind of consistent level in terms of playing. I don't know, but yeah, I think just that for me, like he was great last night. Konaté was great, but for me, that idea that actually you play him and the lad alongside him is probably going to look good. With not taking anything away from Konaté, but actually given acknowledging Matip's role in that.
John, the player that we can tend to miss out, and let's be clear, he scores last night, is Salah, because you just get used to so much brilliance from him. The first half an hour's, you know, both at the time, but also looking back on it this morning, it's outrageous, some of what he's doing. Because he doesn't beat five of them and stick it in the bottom corner, you almost take for granted the number of times he beats two or three, pins them all the way back, pops a little ball off, gets it again, beats two or three again. It must have been horrendous that first half to play against him in a Newcastle shirt. And as I say, he also shows real composure and knocks it into the back of the net.
Yeah, it's a nice finish, isn't it? The more you watch it, the more you see sort of how so clinical, you know, he is. He just boom, he pounces on it, and it's in the back of the net before the keeper can react. And like you say, Neil, he's a threat all night. He's constantly finding space, which is tough because he's up against teams who are determined not to give him any. But he's just too smart as well as too good. You know, he's pulling into sort of different areas. One minute he's very, very wide. The next he's sort of pulling through the middle, he can drop, he's aware of where his teammates are, he's aware of, you know, where the ball is, and he's just a constant menace, and he's a threat all the time, and he's trying to be a threat all the time. He's just constantly thinking about how can I get through, how can I get myself some space, as I said, and how can I sort of hurt the opposition. And yeah, he was gutted to go off, wasn't he? But I'm sure he sort of understands that, you know, there's hopefully a lot of battles to come, really. And so 25 minutes sat watching, and maybe a bit of frustration. It's hopefully bad news there for Tottenham on Sunday.
He was frustrated to come off. I think he was also just a bit frustrated second half, and that he couldn't quite get back into it in exactly the same way, Paul, that he would have liked. The first half, though, I'll say it again, it's just astonishingly good football.
Oh, he's just on it. Like Callum Wilson for them, pulls a ball down out the air, which was a great first touch. Salah does that every time the ball goes near him. You know, it's like this big shock that Callum Wilson did it. A great touch, but Salah's literally doing that every time the ball goes near him.
Yeah.
I thought the first half hour or so, he was just almost unplayable. I thought actually the change that they had when Jamal Lewis went off and Richie came on helped Newcastle a little bit in terms to be able to defend Salah maybe. The ball he plays across to Mane first time was just on another planet. I still don't know how we did that. That's absolute top draw. But he's, you know, people, even in the game, they're talking about what form he's in. Like, he's been in this form since he signed for us. Like,
it's not form.
Can't talk to form no more. but they continue to do that, don't they? They continue to talk about excellent form. Just excellent player.
Yeah, it is that simple, Emma. And, you know, it's now, if it is form, it's at the very least it's form that's lasted the season, and he finishes last season pretty strongly. You know, the goal at Old Trafford, he just is. And it is that first touch in lots of ways, because it sets up everything that is to come next with him all the time. And it's so consistent, to the point you're stunned if it isn't a very good first touch. If it isn't a very good first touch, you're almost going, oh, what's wrong with him there? And yeah. that that's berserk. There are balls that are coming at him from all angles, but you're always absolutely certain he'll get that touch right, and then he'll just go from there. And as I say, I don't know, you can't get there before him. Then he's got it under control because his touch is so good, and then he's terrifying you. And they appear to be the steps that every defender has to go through.
Yeah, and just to say, by the way, that his reaction at coming off is like taking a pint away from Gibbo.
There are more battles to fight, John. You need to be fresh for a congested Christmas period.
Yeah, yeah, fair. But no, like, you're absolutely right. Like, that first touch, I think, because he's got this ability to just, you know, turn your body in ways that, like, you don't think is possible. You know, he can drop a shoulder and you know, go past you to the right so quickly, or he can do the same on the other side. You know, he's not really got kind of like a favoured side. So I think your body position as a defender is, and Paul will know more of this, you know, being like an elite centre-half, but, like, you know, your body position, it's difficult because you're like, you know, like you say, if you engage too much, then he's sort of given that opportunity to flick it past you because he's got the intelligence and he's got the speed to then beat you. But then if you stand off him, he's got the footwork and the skill to still kind of drop a shoulder and beat you. So he's so difficult to mark. And yeah, and that first touch, it's almost like he pulls it off and then the crowd straight away know, right, here we go. And it's like there's only a few players in my lifetime that I've watched play for Liverpool where every single time they touch the ball and it is that first touch, you go, right, come on. And it really gets you on your feet and it gets you excited. And Mo Salah is absolutely in that period, which, as you say, has been going on for, what, 3 seasons now. But just every time he gets the ball, it's, you know he's going to do something with it.
I'd quite like him to beat me early, John, and get it out the way. Of Emma's list of options there, I'd just like that bit to be out the way. If you could just do it fast, and then I'll just watch. I'll just sort of jog, do the discontented jog of, well, what was I meant to do, and go from there with him. The context the game's played in, and by the way, just as a quick note, I thought Keita was great when he came on, and we'll talk later about what we do for the game against Tottenham. But one of the things to say before we get into that, John, because I don't want to do it in the build-up to the Tottenham game, but we've got to acknowledge that it's possible the Tottenham game might not go ahead for one reason or another. Could pertain to Tottenham, could pertain to Liverpool, could pertain to the possibility, at least, that the Premier League decides to get rid of all the games this weekend, given the fact that 5 are now already out. We talked about this on Friday's show earlier in the week, that there isn't really as much transparency as I think that people, teams, squads, supporters could do with at this point as to what's influencing the decision-making process, where and when. But it is, I think, you know, it's a serious situation where, you know, it is going to cause massive fixture congestion. I think Liverpool will be desperate to play the game against Tottenham. I really do, because I think what they won't want is to be trying to look at fitting things back into the schedule in the second half of the season where they can avoid it. But they've got to have enough players to do that. And the manager was very clear, if we've lost 3, the realistic situation is we're going to lose at least another couple.
Yeah, it feels unlikely, doesn't it, that it'll just sort of be perfectly contained with those three players, really. They've tested positive. You would imagine, you know, as you say, Neil, there'll be sort of one or two more, you know, over the next couple of days, and then Liverpool will have a decision to make, really, on whether they want to apply. And that's what it seems to be, doesn't it? As you say, it's a bit confusing. Supporters don't know, even managers, when asked about it, say, well, they're not entirely sure, but obviously there is a system in place, and obviously, you know, it's working to a degree because 5 games have been sort of postponed within good time, thankfully, for the weekend. And so I think, you know, from a Liverpool point of view, like you say, Neil, they will want to play the games that are planned for them, that are planned in the head for them as well. And so we'll, you know, I mean, everything's planned to the nth degree at a top football club, isn't it? And so they'll want to be sort of playing these games. But as you say, pushing them down the line, you know, doesn't really sort of, you know, help us either. And so I think, you know, when you've heard Jürgen speak as well, you know, he's talked about the fact that, you know, if they can go, they want to. And I think that'll be a general Premier League thing, really, because who's to say the situation's going to get any better or won't sort of get any worse from here, really. So I think if there's 2 teams able to play each other, I think they'll continue to do that. And hopefully, that's Liverpool and Spurs on Sunday.
The last little thing on this as well, Paul, is there is, if we're frank about it, for all these teams, there will be a degree of a sporting consideration. And what I mean by that is, I'll use Leeds on Boxing Day as a really good example. Leeds at the minute, not a COVID issue, but they've got injury issues. The form's absolutely nowhere. They're not the side that they were 12 months ago. but they're also possibly currently be at the lowest ebb. And I think there will be a thing, won't there, at Liverpool where it'll be, well, we don't necessarily play them in March, where they're either knee-deep in a relegation battle, knowing they need the points against Liverpool on the one hand, or on the other hand, they're just in better nick, Bamford's back fully fit, this is going on, that's going on, and we're going to be trying to cram that in amongst our Champions League run that we hope we're on as well. You know, I think there is going to be a thing here where... I think Liverpool would operate in good faith. Don't get me wrong, at all stages, I think Liverpool would operate in good faith. But there will be a thing for some clubs, and Liverpool also do get to be one of those clubs too, where clubs will be thinking in a sporting sense, well, we just want to get this game played. Now suits us to play this game if we can.
Yeah, I think it's a natural thing, isn't it, that you're looking after their own interests, or all the clubs to some degree. From a fan point of view, you know, you want the football to carry on, but you also want to be watching the best players and your team to have the opportunity to have the best players on the pitch, don't you, when you're watching it? So it's like, we have this conversation with international football all the time, and it's sort of the same kinds of conversation in terms of let's have the top players on there. I think, you know, you can see that it's already happening. There's lots of managers coming out, sort of taking varying positions, most of it around the ambiguity of the rules, which I don't think is a surprise when you look at the ambiguity of the rules, you know, outside of football, never mind in football. So all you have to do is look at Everton. You know, it's great watching Everton, looking at Everton's lineup at the best of times, but Everton's lineup last night against Chelsea, was ridiculous in terms of what they had available to them. So everyone's going to be playing that game, aren't they? You can see it coming now, and all that jostling for who, what, when we can have what we want kind of thing.
Dave Lynch has just tweeted that Liverpool are still waiting for further test results from Van Dijk, Fabinho and Jones. No other players have tested positive yet. So as I say, I want us to sort of clear our palate of this. And then when we talk about build-up to the game, we'll do so, as I say, in good faith that there's only the three, and we'll talk from there. It may not be the case, but Liverpool and the clubs in general... I think there does need to be sort of a Premier League wide answer. There needs to be just a little bit more communication as to precisely what's what. The drip feeding of, for instance, there's only seven Manchester United players who they will be able to field, which ends up coming through the Manchester United journalists. You know, I do feel as though either the clubs could just demonstrate more transparency themselves and just be really open and say, this is where we are. They don't have to name names, but be able to say, this is where we are and this is what's happening. Alternatively, I think if there could be better process, and again in the public domain from the Premier League, it'd obviously help you do your job, but it would also I think help supporters know that the decisions that are being made for the right reasons and in good faith.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly valid question of the clubs and of the league. I think like you say, just the clubs maybe every day saying, you know, we've got zero positives or however many, for the next 2 weeks, or even if it's not every day, even if it's, you know, just maybe every 2 or 3 days, I think is good. Because I think it's also, you've got to think about the supporters as well. You know, if supporters are trying to plan in terms of, you know, their work schedule, travel schedule, and, you know, there's games getting called off left, right and centre. I think obviously you've got the question of broadcasters as well. You know, if they can see that there's, you know, some positive cases that are going on at Leicester and there's a chance it might be cancelled, they might make the executive decision to maybe, I don't know, put on another game. There's things like that. And I think it's just, yes, while the player's safety absolutely has to be the number one priority, there's no question about that. I still think, you know, Eddie Howe was talking about the integrity of the league, but I sort of agree with Klopp, really, that I think... You know, you don't want a situation where it got to last season where you're absolutely piling in 5-6 games in like 2 weeks because you've had to cancel those, because I think that affects the integrity of the league as well. So I don't think that argument really comes into it. I think it's just, you know, you want to try and get the games played. I think that has to be the priority. That's just my opinion. And I think the best way to do that is to have more transparency, so then clubs and fans and the league as a whole can then plan around that.
Okay, Jürgen is doing his press conference as we speak. We will be talking about that and what comes up from it through the second part, well, the fourth part of this show. Before then, we've got a couple of little bits and pieces for you. We've got Vicky and Jess from the Merseymaid store. That is to come. And we've got Andy Kenwright as well on the Zebedee Zika series of children's books. But if you're with us on Tour Live, you're barely going to see the join. It's going to happen in 3, 2, 1.
It's John Gibbons for Tour Live, and I'm in the wonderful setting of Merseymaid, very festive at the moment. We are on in December, but I've had a tour around this fantastic facility and delighted to be here and very pleased to be joined around the table by Vicky and Jess from Mercy Maker. Thanks so much for having me today.
No problem. It's great to have you here.
So first of all, I can tell us a little bit more about Mercy Maker. You're right from the city centre. I've just had a short walk from our offices. So tell us a little bit more, if you don't mind, about this fantastic place.
Yeah. Well, we are a shop, stroke cafe, stroke event space, and also artist studios. And we're just steps away from Liverpool One, just behind John Lewis. And we're really, really pleased that our sort of whole USP is to support local makers. We've got 100 local creatives now in our shop who sell very, very, very different items. We've got gin, jam, honey, artist prints, jewellery. And they're all downstairs amongst the cafe, sort of where we've got tables dotted around. Then upstairs, 10 artist studios, of which Jess is one of them here, as well as working for Mersey May, so she can talk to you about all the artists maybe in a minute. And then there are event space, and the event space is where people can get involved themselves making things. We've got workshops going on. We've got different things, candle making workshop this week. I think also weaving workshops. We've had holly wreath workshops, and it's a great space where people can come and get involved themselves and sort of find their creative side.
Yeah, it really is a sort of creative hub in the centre of Liverpool. And that's what we've sort of aimed to create, really, is a place, an inclusive place built on community and creativity.
I mean, it's thriving here. I've come in today, you know, there's artists working, there's people having lunch in the cafe and stuff downstairs, there's people obviously shopping, you know, for gifts and stuff like that. Yeah. You come in, Jess, and you feel the energy straight away. Yeah. I feel more artistic just being
here. No, you do, you really do. And that is sort of one of the really important things to us, is we want people to feel comfortable. We want people to be able to unleash their creativity. And we've had people sort of describe it as an oasis of creativity, which is amazing.
It's really in the heart of our city. We really want it to be a space where people can come, feel safe and get involved. And the 10 artist studios we've got very different makers there. So you can see them at work and commission their art, some art commissioned pieces. So there we've got, I'm trying to think, we've got abstract artists. We've got a nail artist, who's really popular, most of the year round, but very much this time of year. Yeah. We've got lots of people who are making materials cushions, graphic designers, and also actually a lady on the telly who does upcycling as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, lots of things to see every time you come that's different.
Yeah.
You've launched and sort of opened a wonderfully timed just before COVID. So you've had sort of, you know, quite a battle really. So you must be delighted now to be able to open the doors back up. I know you said online and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, you must feel like, you know, you've been through as tough a time as it can be really.
It has. We opened in November 2019 and it was obviously just building our name at that point. And then, yes, just like 4 months in to have to close again. We sort of opened and closed, and it's only really been then a year that we've actually been physically open. But we're really, really grateful actually for the city. We've been really embraced. People have sort of, I think, understood the concept. You know, I had to write a business plan for Raystar, what will Brexit do? But in some ways, maybe COVID's brought that forward. It's made people think about what's on their high street and what they want to support. And I think that's where, you know, we're really looking at Mersey May, because people have embraced us, and that's the people who want to sell through us, and obviously people who want to buy items.
Yeah.
And even also in the cafe, we sell locally sourced items where we can, with the tea and coffee and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's very much that USP, and people have, I think it's been great, kept us on the high street, you know, up to now. And next year, we just hope for more. You know, we're getting a new website's going live in a few days. And, you know, we ship things overseas and things like that, but we're hopefully going to make it a lot easier for people to, you know, navigate around the website and send things out.
Yeah, the people of Liverpool have been so supportive of what we've done. And I think the space sort of reflects all the different elements that Liverpool has to offer. So we've got all sorts of things from different, like from football-related gifts to... it really sort of... It captures everything that the city has to offer, which is...
And Crosby Beach, and all areas of the region covered.
Yeah.
And we're also actually, what we're sort of throwing at the end, we're called the Gordon Smith Cafe, so it's Mersey Made, the Gordon Smith Cafe. And we've done that because the building actually in itself is just over 120 years old now, and it was a Gordon Smith Siemens Institute. And we've been really grateful, actually, a lot of the tour guides have supported us and, you know, bring us part of the tours. And we now have a history wall. That was part of our second year anniversary, just a couple of weeks away. So you can come and see the history of the building and sort of get that bit of, you know, absorb the history of Liverpool too when you're here, and think of the sailors that would have stayed here, you know, for many times.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful part of Liverpool. It's a beautiful spot you're in, and then you come in and you see all this wonderfulness. And it's interesting you talk about, you know, us all thinking more about us and what we're buying and who we're sort of buying from. And I think I've certainly been on that journey, you know, during sort of lockdown, you know, thinking about, you know, what do I want to be giving all my money to big supermarkets or whatever, or, you know, will my money go further within the community if I spend with people? And you've obviously really embraced that here, but not just, I guess, you know, buying local things, but I think in some cases, again, meeting the people who are buying.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Story. That would be nice to do as an artist.
No, it's amazing. I think that's one of my favourite things about Merseybeat, is that you can constantly interact with the public and sort of see what people are interested in at the moment. Also from like a visitor's point of view, it's such a unique opportunity. Like, there's nowhere else in the city like it. That's one of my favourite things about it.
Yeah.
It's great.
And we're hoping to be able to support people's careers, you know, right through. And you know, some people have come to us literally with like, they've made 10 items and they ask if they can sell, and then we've been able to give them advice and then have to show, you know, advise them how to print the items, and they've just been able to grow what they sell through us, you know. And Jess here, we're really lucky actually. Jess has been doing your career, haven't you, for 2 years now, Ruth? But you now have your work in Liverpool One, and you know, going far. So it has, we are a stepping stone, we hope to be, for lots of creatives in the city.
Yeah, fantastic.
What we do.
Space, or just an avenue to sort of sell what they do.
It's also bouncing ideas off each other, because obviously we have like 100 different creatives, so getting that advice is invaluable, really. So,
That's, you know, from an artist point of view, for people sort of in the city, you're looking for presents and things like that, the sort of everything and feeling. As I said, I only spent £100. Wait, the view downstairs, it's going to be lovely to get stairs at the moment. It's great, but it's, if you're not sure about, you know, what to get for sort of an auntie and stuff, or your partner or whatever, there's so many different things in terms of variety that really sort of jumped out to me. And pricing as well, from everywhere, from a couple of pounds to sort of more expensive. There really is something for everyone.
There's a lot of inspiration, I think, here as well. So if you're stuck for something, you can definitely find something.
And staff will always help, you know, and I think that's been the good thing. We've always wanted to make it so people can come in and buy something, you know, whether they are the young, you know, teenagers looking for something for their mum, you know, right through to people who are, you know, do have a few hundreds or thousand pounds items that people want to really, you know, very authentic original artwork. But right through to, we've got gingerbread cookies going on the shelves. The next few days, you know, we have locally roasted neighbourhood coffee, you know, for example. So there's lots of things. And we also do hampers. You can build your own hamper and things like that. So can also make it slightly personalised. So yeah, lots for people to can find.
I can tell where the coffee's delicious. Yeah. Just tried it. So I'm going to get our messages, anyone who's in the city, who's coming to buy presents, or, you know, either for Christmas or just generally, or somewhere nice to have some lunch, just sort of popping in to see you guys, you know, and just behind Liverpool One, and like you say, Merseymead, but also, you know, people who may have moved away from the city, want a little bit of Liverpool home, or people who've been to the city in the past and maybe didn't quite have time, you know, got a bit too excited to buy a few sort of mementos. They can come onto your website as well and buy directly from these wonderful artists.
That's great. Yeah, we can ship all over the world. So, you know, we've got that in place to do. And yeah, we're also looking for makers as well. So if people are interested in selling through us, they can also contact us on the website.
A lovely thing that has happened quite a lot is people will buy gifts for people who've moved away from Liverpool and sort of ship them directly, which is lovely as well, just that sort of token of home.
We've had someone who was on a naval ship, I think it was, wanted specifically shipped over to Canada. For example, because their son was on that. So yeah, we always try and support where we can.
Yeah,
we get to do that.
Thanks so much for welcoming me into this wonderful place today. And there's a way for everyone to do sort of check them out. And have to be for Christmas shopping. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Bye now.
It's Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons in separate locations, John, in separate locations, because we all are trying to mitigate risk in different ways. And a way to do that is to get your beer delivered. We are having this chat about Beer 52 rather than 8 free beers. You can get 10 off them right now. We remember the Beer 52 days, John, and say what you want. They are actually a real positive and a boost.
It's funny. I had a beer with a couple of subscribers last night who we put onto Beer 52, and they were talking about how much they obviously enjoyed it and the variety and chance to try new things, but also, you know, waiting for the beer delivery during sort of lockdown and stuff like that. It'd be, you know, the most exciting part of the month. Yeah. You know, and so saying, I won't get any beers until the Beer 52 stuff comes. And then by the time it comes, being sort of, you know, so thirsty for it. But yeah, but I'm glad that subscribers are enjoying it. And yeah, we enjoy it as well. I think it's a fantastic offering, especially this special offer, as you say, 10 free beers and only having to pay the postage.
Yeah, at this time of year as well, do give it a serious thought. So they are offering the listeners 10 free beers. If you go to www.beer52, they're the number 5 and the number 2.com /wrap, and you pay the postage of £5.95, you get the free case. If you do it before the 17th of December, that is today, so act fast, you get two extras in there as well. They send the experts all around the globe to find the best bits of business in there for you. Each month, members receive a new case. Members have had beer from more than 40 countries across 5 continents. And if dark beer is not for you, it's a new level of risk, I'd say, the dark beer thing, John. I like them, but it does feel edgier, it's fair to say.
Yeah, and if it's not for you, I'm the same, really. You just sort of, you know, tick that and light ones only. As you say, the safer option.
The safer option, but, you know, you should live dangerously if you can. you'll also receive a copy of Ferment Magazine, and you'll get the delicious snack. So after redeeming the first case, you then join the monthly beer club at £24 a month, but there's no minimum commitments, and you can pause and cancel at any time. We really legitimately do enjoy it. We do partake in it from our own money. I hasten to add in there as well. So yeah, if you've been thinking about doing something like this and you're not quite sure, I think now is a great time to do it. So do crack on today if you can. Sign yourself up to Beer 52. That's Neil and John. We shall see you later.
And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by an old friend, Big Red, South Liverpool boy like me, and a friend from school, Andy Kenwright, and now author. So Andy, thanks so much for coming in.
Hiya, John. Yeah, thanks for having me in. Yeah, good to be here. Nice to see where the magic happens of tour. You know, I've been following you for a while since you've been doing all this. And yeah, it's great, mate. Great to get in. Thanks.
No, nice one. It's really nice to welcome you in, and especially to see, you know, an old friend doing so well. And I want to talk about your book that you've got out at the moment. It's your... First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the process, because I know it's your first sort of foray into writing. So I know there's a bit of an interesting story about how it came about. So if you just want to talk to us about that.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, I did English literature in university, and I was going to go on to be either a sports journalist or an author, basically, or a bit of both. That's what my goal was. But then when I finished uni, I just kind of fell into this sports travel business, and it was quite successful in it, you know. I was like sorting out packages for people going around the world, watching boxing events, even people coming to Liverpool to watch the match and stuff, you know, sorting out accommodation and hotels and packages and stuff. And so yeah, it was all going great, and then I completely forgot about my writing. I just kind of buried it, just because I was doing well in life with what I was doing. And then basically the crux of my business was international travel. So as soon as the coronavirus happened, then yeah, the rug was just completely pulled, and then my company went bust, basically. My wife was working as a part-time as a nurse in Alderay. She used to be full-time. She went down to part-time when we had the kids. And I'd even been saying to her, look, Rhian, just, you know, just jack it in, you know, we're doing all right, we're doing all right. And then luckily that didn't happen, because all of a sudden the roles completely reversed. Yeah. There was plenty of hours going in the Aussie, of course, so she went up to full-time, and then I just became a full-time dad for basically the best part of 2 years, which you know, I really enjoyed. It was great having that time with the kids, you know, you can't put a price on that. And then maybe about halfway through, I just... sort of pen on the table and was like, whoa, didn't I used to use these? Was like, oh. So yeah, I picked it up and started writing again, and then wow, now I've got a book out and another one out next week as well.
Fantastic. So the book that is out now that people can get now is Ebony Zika, World's Best Zookeeper. It's based on a true story around Liverpool. Obviously, you've sort of adapted it and used artistic license and stuff like that, but it's based on a true story that happened in the city.
That's it, yeah. So it's a story that I stumbled across. Obviously, there used to be 3 zoos in Liverpool back in the day. There was one in Walton, one in West Derby, and then the most recent one, the Liverpool Zoological Gardens, otherwise known as the Mossley Hill Zoo, was on there, just on Elmswood Road there in Egbeth in 1932 to 1938. So it was like, like local history, and I've been like reading a bit about local history during lockdown, and then stumbled across the fact that there was this zoo there at the top where Rose Lane meets Elmswood Road, right, as you know, John, right by where I grew up,
yeah.
You know, and it was like, I was fascinated to hear about it, and I delved more into it, found out about Mickey, who was a chimpanzee who they had there, who escaped four times, and I've tracked down, I mean, it's all there online, all the newspaper articles about his various escapes. He escaped four times, three times he got into Egbert Vale. One time he went down Rose Lane towards Allerton Road, running amok, getting chased, and it was fascinating to hear about it and think, wow, you know, back, what, 70, 80 years ago, that was like, he'd be running past my house with an army of zookeepers and police chasing after him. So, but then sadly, in the end, in his fourth and final escape, he got into Sudley School, indeed your old school, and then obviously a wild animal and school children doesn't mix. So sadly, Mickey was shot to death, basically. As when he got out of the school playground, it was harrowing. You know, I shed a tear. I'm not ashamed to say that.
Yeah.
You know, reading about it, because, you know, I've become quite invested in it. So I wrote a kid's book about it, but in my version, obviously, Mickey doesn't, you know, meet his sad end, which he did in real life. You know, in my version, the young zookeeper who's working in the zoo comes to his rescue, and then the two of them have to go on an adventure to try and topple the evil mayor of the city, Chippius Chitterson, who's looking to bulldoze the Mossley Hill Zoo and build flats. So yeah, that's basically the story. It just came into my head as I was starting to write again, and I'd been reading so much children's literature with my son. I mean, my son's five, so, you know, when I was wanted to be an author back in the day, I'd never envisaged myself as a children's author.
Yeah.
But because I'd been reading so much children's literature, when it came to that, my time came to write a book, that's what I went for. And yeah, it's been a fascinating process. And, you know, a lot of children's literature that I read with him, you know, there's some really good stuff about, and there's some okay stuff, and there's a lot of it that I think, do you know what, I want to do something where, as an adult, I can enjoy reading it to him. You know, there's so much stuff out there with messages and stuff, which is amazing. You know, there's loads of great stuff with messages about children's mental health, dealing with tragedy, which is all brilliant. But with mine, I've tried to just make it more completely story-based, but with the story being and written in a way whereby adults can enjoy reading it to the children, hence improving children's literacy. Because, you know, if your kid's asking you to read a book and then you enjoy it, you're going to more so do it than go for the easy option and get the iPad out, you know, which is easily done. But it's, you know, it's something that I'm open to, you know, make a little difference and get people away from, you know.
Yeah, well, it's a great story and it's beautifully written. But I know, you know, I mean, I enjoyed it, but kids love it, don't they? I know you've done some stuff in schools and stuff like that, and there's something about the story that just captivates children.
Yeah, that's it. Fascinating. I mean, so I've been into, obviously, first I went into Sudley, which was great, obviously, because that's the school where it happened. Yeah. And the kids were all fascinated to hear. A couple of them knew that there used to be a zoo there, and must have been told by the parents who knew it. But like, I'd say 90-odd% had no idea there was a zoo right next to the school back in the day, and that this chimpanzee was running berserk in the very playground that they play in every break time. So that was great going in there to do it. Then I went into King David, which is my lad's school, so again, that was great to get in there. And then most recently I've just been into Rudston, which was my old school, and indeed your old school as well, for a couple of years,
yeah.
So yeah, it's been great, and like you say, the kids have just been absolutely loved it, and especially for the fact that, you know, even if I do say so myself, I think it's a great story, but for the fact that other teachers have been saying they haven't had this kids in assembly because of what's been going on in the world. We're just getting to a phase where they're letting people back in. So, I mean, fingers crossed it continues. Who knows what's going to happen in the coming months? Look, but, you know, it's been lovely to get back in there, to get in there, read to the kids. And yeah, it's captivated them all. So yeah, it's been brilliant, yeah.
So, I mean, this book's out now. You mentioned there's a follow-up as well.
There is, yeah. So Zebedee Zeke, the Christmas Zookeeper. Now, that's an adaptation of the classic Clement Clark Moore poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas. Now that was written about 150 years ago. Everyone will know it, you know. It was the night before Christmas when all through the house. But in my version, in Zebedee's one, it was, 'twas the night before Christmas when all through the zoo, not a creature was staring, not even a shrew. And then it goes on from there, and it's just a full-on adaptation of the poem. But Father Christmas crashes into the Mossley Hill Zoo, basically. And Zebedee and Mickey have to save Christmas. So, it's great. And it's good because what I've found out, I wrote it, and it's like, you know, it's, like I say, it's a big adaptation of that poem. When I wrote it, I found out that if an author's passed away over 70 years ago, you can use their material, so I don't have to give Clement Clark more a drink on it. Now, you know me, John, if I bump into his great-grandson, of course I'll buy him a pint, but, you know, I'm not necessarily obliged to, but, yeah, so I'm learning all bits about the trade as I'm going on, and, yeah, it's a great little one to have out for Christmas as well. I mean, by the time this goes out, it'll be available to buy.
Brilliant. So yeah. People want to buy either of the books, what's the best way of doing it?
On the official Zebedee Zika website, www.zebediezika.co.uk, you can certainly order the first one and pre-order the second one, if not indeed buy it by the time this goes out. Also, you can order them worldwide on Amazon and buy them from selected bookshops. If you order it on Amazon, obviously Bezos takes his cut and you don't get the same quality of book. If you get it off the official website, it's got a nice lovely spot UV on the front, it's signed by me, and also there's a chance that little Zebedee Zika himself will deliver it for you. Me and my lad have been going around delivering to some selected people who order it by ours, so yeah, you never know, you might get a knock on Zebedee on your door if you buy it off the official website, but Amazon's also great as well.
No, I would encourage everyone to read it. It's a brilliant book. It's beautifully sort of presented and stuff, the animation on it's fantastic, but a lovely present for a young one in your life. But just before we finish, Andy, you must be loving the Reds at the moment.
Oh, John, it's great. I've really loved getting my houses at the Derby the other night. I've got Wolves coming up tomorrow, so yeah, it's just been great getting back in there, getting back on the, I love going on the aways with the lads, you know, it's one of the main things that I missed. I, of course, miss going to Anfield as well, yeah. But the aways, as you know, for me, is like my favourite aspect of following the Reds, so yeah, it's just been great to get back there, and wow, it's what a season it's proven to be, you know.
Yeah, what a team to watch. Andy, thanks so much for coming in. We're good to everyone. Zebedee Zika, if you go onto the website, do buy it direct, you'll get a nicer product, but obviously it helps authors out as well. But Andy, thanks so much for coming in. And best
thanks
of luck
a lot for having me, John.
And we're back. All different people, all lived through different experiences since we were last with you, Emma Sanders, with Paul Hogan and with John Gibbons. So moving forward in the news, John, that no one else is at this stage embroiled in the COVID question from a Liverpool point of view. I loved Naby Keita's 20 minutes, I really did, and I would be looking to start him against Tottenham, probably alongside Thiago and Henderson. It's really harsh on Chamberlain, the manager's just big Chamberlain up, said pretty much the best Oxlade since I've been here, massive step. He's doing a lot of graft for the team, Chamberlain, as well. But I just loved the amount of control it felt as though Naby Keita had on proceedings.
Yeah, I think it took him a little while to sort of get into it, but once he did, I thought he was impressive. Awful shot aside, which I'm sure drove you mad, Neil. But yeah, he looks, you know, of the two of them who come on, he looks the most sort of raring to go, didn't he? Firmino looks sort of miles off it, really, and you'd be shocked if he sort of starts against Tottenham. You'd imagine it'd be Leicester in the League Cup for Bobby for his first start. But Naby looked a little bit more ready, and I think you're obviously looking at these games and saying, well, where can we freshen up a bit? You know, what are our options? And, you know, Milner's obviously one as well, gets a couple of sort of minutes, you know, towards the end. But Naby, I think, you know, did a fairly, you know, decent job of putting his hand up there and saying, you know, I'll give you fresh legs on Sunday if you want, boss. I'm here for you. I'm ready. I can offer you something different, you know, from the midfield, which obviously he can. So, yeah, he certainly put himself in contention for the start Sunday.
Banging contention, I think it's fair to say, Paul. The other reason why I'd have a little look at Keita for this one is obviously we can, if we are talking without Fabinho, which I think we are, then I think just that little bit more, you know, you feel as though all of obviously Henderson, Thiago and Keita have got slightly more six-ish elements in them than, say, Chamberlain has. Milner's a bit interesting in that as well, but I still prefer Milner when he's either on a search and destroy mission on the one hand, or alternatively looking to be more creative. I think that, you know, it offers just a little bit more security, I think, to Liverpool if they can get Keita on the pitch for at least an hour.
Yeah, definitely. I think Naby's an interesting one, isn't he? We all know about the injuries, but actually when he comes back in, he tends to be pretty ready to go straight away. Problem is he breaks down pretty quickly afterwards, I suppose, is the issue. But I think this season, when we saw him play, we saw more of him as a player, and I feel like he's expressing himself more, even being more aggressive, which I've thought has been missing a little bit from his game since he's come to Liverpool. So I think it makes sense to play him, and you know, we need to freshen it up, and out of the three midfielders, that'd be the way I would go. So I think for me, I can see that one happening with Chamberlain obviously coming on if necessary.
The manager, as you say, he's talking as we're talking, or he's said a number of quite interesting things. One of the things he says is we have no information about Tottenham. He doesn't know if they've trained. He's saying they'd like to play, but he also doesn't know literally what to expect from them. Literally, who's fit, we don't know. In amongst them, who's available for selection, we don't know the answer to that either. In general as well, I was pulling a little sort of report show together for the Anfield Wrap, and they haven't played a game since the 5th of December, and there's only four games of Conte being the manager in the league so far this season. And you're left sort of just being a little bit bemused. Not quite, Conte's got his style of football, we can at least guess that, but where everyone fits into this. I think Liverpool are taking a bit of a plunge into the unknown.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say that the same thing, the fact that they won't have played for 2 weeks, if that game goes ahead, well, over 2 weeks. There's also that question mark of how many players have actually been allowed to be on the training ground with Conte and therefore working, with him, under him, with his new ideas. It's difficult, isn't it? So I think that does provide an interesting element to the game. But then at the same time, when we were talking earlier about perhaps the mentality going into that Newcastle game almost got in the heads of the players that it was going to be a bit gritty. This might be a good thing because it almost feels like there's a little bit of a European game element to it where there's that sort of slight unknown. You're not really sure what, they might have been in good form in their league, but how does that translate in terms of, European competition? And it's almost like there's that kind of feel with Spurs. And I think that will help Liverpool because they will then have to play almost to their game plan and to their strengths, as opposed to kind of worrying too much about what Spurs are going to do. And I think in terms of this, this game, if Liverpool play their game plan, which is obviously to, kind of suffocate possession, close out the spaces, press high, get the ball to the wing backs and then obviously get the likes of Salah and Mane sort of getting in behind. I think on paper, if Liverpool do that, then they are quite comfortably the better team. So therefore, by sort of not really knowing much about Spurs, it almost I think sort of ticks that mentality box for Liverpool where they kind of don't have to worry about that side of things.
It feels a game, John, where Liverpool, even allowing for a full strength Spurs, should be going into it thinking they're going to dominate midfield. If there's a big weakness, a clear sort of clanging weakness that Conte is going to have to address quite quickly, I like Højbjerg as a player, but if you're going to play 3-4-3, he's left with a hell of a lot of work in there. Skip's pedigree from Norwich, this isn't to say he's not a good player or won't go on to be a very good player, but you feel as though if Tottenham are coming into a midfield against Liverpool a man down, then You need your two to be, I'd say, significantly stronger than both Højbjerg and Skip, and that's presuming that both of them are the lads who are available.
Yeah, I think that is fair, Neil. I think we should and will expect to sort of dominate this game, and it wouldn't sort of surprise me if Tottenham almost see this as a game to get them back playing,
almost like really a pre-season effort.
Absolutely, and they're looking at this and thinking, well, Liverpool are ahead of us now. They're ahead in terms of development and where they are really. So seeing it as, not necessarily something to try a few things, but more just to get out there back on the pitch and get back sort of playing again and get some match fitness and sharpness back for more sort of winnable battles. It wouldn't surprise me at all if you sort of see it sort of, them approach it like that. But then that's not to say that the Liverpool will necessarily win the game, because obviously we need to, be clinical, we need to take our chances, and we need to make sure that we, turn what we were expecting to be dominant into goals.
We expect to win this, Hogan, and that's a remarkably, I think, a remarkably chipper sort of perspective. City, for instance, first game, go to Tottenham, get beat. And I think we do have to take that under advisement. That was the first game under the new manager. Obviously, everyone's a bit pre-season-y at that point, so it's worth pointing that out, but they still do drop points there. Yet, because of where we are, because of the way we view City at the moment, because of it being looking like another Liverpool December where the points start and they just keep rolling in and rolling in, I think we're going to Tottenham about as confident as you can plausibly be going to Tottenham. And I think that's credit to Liverpool, but it means that, I'm sure the team wouldn't be, but we shouldn't be complacent, but we should be very confident.
Yeah, I think, we're steamrolling, aren't we, at the minute? We're we're getting wins in all different ways as well. Yeah, we've gone through a period where we're getting a lot of goals, but even where things haven't maybe clicked like last night, we still feel like we've got that sort of drive and belief. And even when the personnel's had to change and things like that, we still feel like there's that sort of movement and motivation within the squad, and that confidence that it's going to come. You know, even after Newcastle went down, it didn't feel for once, it was early in the game obviously, but it didn't feel for one second that team didn't feel like they were going to win. So I think I suppose some slight concerns are that, you know, they have had a little bit, depending on how much availability they have, they have had an opportunity for the pre-season. Conte's had an opportunity maybe to figure things out a little bit more than he might have done if it was just rolling into game after game, depending on who he's had available to work with, I suppose. But, you know, and obviously they've got the three lads up top who can cause anyone problems, but this team, it feels like, you know, we're going to we should dominate the game, and there is chances even with the back four or back three.
Expecting a Liverpool win, Emma?
Yeah, I think so. I just think, you know, the way that they're playing and as we said, you know, the confidence that's oozing out of them, you know, like they were playing off sort of back heels and, you know, and doing sort of croy turns and really slick sort of one-touch passing against Newcastle the other day, and it's almost like, yes, you can't be complacent, but when you've got players of this quality playing with confidence, they take risks and they're good enough a lot of the time for those risks to, you know, to come off. And that will cause problems for Tottenham. So, yeah, absolutely.
Liverpool win, John?
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be fairly comfortable in the end.
Excellent stuff. All right, then. Thank you very much indeed to Emma, to Paul and to John. Andy for producing as well. Thank you for those who popped up for the insert in the middle of this one. I hope you've enjoyed Tour Live. Thanks for your comments all the way through. They do very much add to the show, remind me of what I've missed talking about so far, so that's useful. Aid the memoirs there on the right hand side in the comments. It's been a pleasure as ever. It is Tour Live. Whatever you're doing this weekend, look, listen, the obvious thing to say is to say stay safe, and we do mean it, but whatever else you are doing this weekend as well, do make sure you enjoy yourselves. We need to obviously find ways to keep bouncing all the way through this period, and a really good way to keep bouncing is the mighty boys in red. See you later.
Sports Social Podcast Network.